But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Oh, it's such a clutch offseason pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
James is here. He's here early, too.
Look like this the NBA TV, James Ham right there.
James, where are you?
I'm in a bomb shelter underneath the basement.
Sounds like it, yep.
Yeah, see, this is what we usually deal with, right? The bomb shelter doesn't have good sound.
Brick walls.
I'm in the NBA TV room, which is hiding right by the media conference room. Mm. Yeah.
Shout out to James for being on NBA TV last week. Big up star.
Oh, it was twice. They had me on before last game, too.
I didn't see that one. I didn't get the notification. I'm going to go back and watch
popular
that.
In NBA TV circles at this point. I don't know why.
Well, it's because the Kings are back to being dysfunctional, and they need your perspective on it. That's pretty.
Amen
much what
to
it
that.
Is.
Yeah,
it's pretty much what it is. Let me reset for James real quick.
Yeah.
We were having a discussion about, you know, if the Sacramento Kings or De'Aaron Fox decided it's time to move on from Sacramento or it's time to move on from De'Aaron. We were talking with Eddie Gonzalez about the two teams in Texas that seem to at least have. San Antonio clearly has a very great interest in landing De'Aaron Fox. There's a belief that Houston would also have an interest. Both teams have very tradable assets, movable assets. They both have very attractive trade offers that could be made to acquire the player, the caliber of De'Aaron Fox. My argument was with both of those teams, you're getting players in return. Mm-hmm. And you've got Domas here, you've got Malik, you've got Keegan. You know, you're at the very, very worst, you're adding some solid depth pieces. And I'm of the mindset that if you make that move, James, you don't need to blow it up and start all over. Like, you have something there that you could salvage this season. And my argument was that you're not going to be any worse than what you are, but you could potentially salvage this season and work this offseason to turn it into something bigger or stronger.
Yeah, I mean, I get that completely. But I think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. I think if there does come a point where the Kings have to trade De'Aaron Fox, number one, I think you're going to wait until after the season. And very specifically, because there are players that are not really available right now to the Kings on other rosters that might be available, you know, this summer. But first and foremost, I think the Kings are going to do everything they can to salvage this relationship. They're going to see if Doug Christie can sort of capture the imagination of this team. I think that they're going to have, you know, lots of conversations about improving the roster and do the best they can in that area to try to make this as appealing a spot for De'Aaron Fox to be as possible. And then if all of that like falls apart, then you're going to look at this summer and say, okay, you know, which team gives me the best opportunity to stay competitive? Like, it's not, I don't think the Kings are looking to take a tremendous step back and start collecting draft picks. They're going to want young assets. They're going to want young players under contract, players that, you know, with potential to be great. They're not going to be looking for, you know, De'Aaron Fox for three role players. You're the Sacramento Kings. It's been time proven that the only way for you to get a star level player is either, well, I mean, it's through the draft. And whether that's because you take a draft pick and you end up trading it for a player like Sabonis, or it's because you draft well and you develop a talent like De'Aaron Fox. And so I could see them making a move, but like there are teams out there that are raising their hand and saying, we would love to get in on the De'Aaron Fox sweepstakes. And at this point, none of those teams really have and it piqued my interest at all. And at the end of the day, I mean, it matters a little bit where De'Aaron Fox wants to play next, but not to the Kings. You know, like as long as they're able to get maximum value, and the only way De'Aaron can tank that value is if he says, I won't go to play to Team X because I won't sign a long-term deal there. That would change things for the Kings. But outside of that, like I'm looking at these teams, like more specifically Houston, and saying, if you guys want to take the next step in your progression, maybe you're willing to give up a couple of really high-end prospects, one or two of which have the potential to be great. And if nothing else, they're going to be really, really good role players. I'm not trading him for three role players to the Spurs.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said, James. Absolutely everything. Number one, to answer your question, Dan, because it's a good question. I think if you did the Spurs pick, the record makes it tough for me to say like you'd be worse because like you're already not good record-wise. But I just think talent-wise, I think you'd be taking a step back if you got Vassell, Sohan, and Stephon Castle, who I really like as a young guy. So I think you'd be a little worse. Houston, it was one of those teams that James is talking about that what you may be looking for, they contractually can't even do anything this year. And I'm talking about Jalen Green. Like, mm-hmm. He can't be moved. So you got to wait for the summer. I think he gives you the biggest return back on – or that you know, potential package. Jalen Green, maybe a Reed Shepard, maybe Cam Whitmore and picks. That might give you the best return. So they'd be number one. I think if you got that, I think that's something where you can come into next season ready to contend. Like, not contend for a championship, but you'd be in this spot. Playoffs, like, thinking...
Contend like we thought we were contending this year.
right. You could do that. The other one that I'm intrigued by, but I don't know if anybody else is the potential Miami trade package. You know, I like Tyler Hero. I think if you...
You love Tyler Hero.
I really like Tyler Hero. Okay. I don't know if I love, but Tyler Hero can go. Mm-hmm. He can play. And, you know, this year... With all the craziness that's going on with Jimmy Butler and Jimmy's been out some games or whatever, I think Tyler Hero's like averaging like 25 points a game. Mm. And, you know, you get him, you get a Jaime Jaquez, and, you know, maybe I think Jokic might be too much for them to give up. But a potential Miami trade proposal is really intriguing to me because I think Hero could step in to, you know, being one of your top scorers and play well with Sabonis. If you're trying to move forward. So I would rank them as Houston, Miami, San Antonio.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, I definitely say Houston. Miami for me is tough. I mean, okay, Tyler Hero, I'm okay with, but at the same time, I don't know that I like the potential of a Tyler Hero, Malik Monk backcourt. I don't know how that works. And that to me is just really tough. Mm. So that's not like super high on my priority list, although I do really like Jaime Jaquez. But again, Jaquez is just a high level role player. And I would say the same thing about Sohan, and I would say even the same thing about Hero. Like, I don't think Hero is going to be an all-star in the Western Conference. And, you know, you can say, well, Fox might not either. But you know, like a Jalen Green has a potential and he's younger and he has that, you know, potential to reach all-star level. And if I'm talking to Houston, I want him. I want Jabari. I'll take Cam Whitmore. I'd beg for Tari Eason, but I doubt that'll happen. You know, if Amen Thompson is on the table, like there's going to be like a group of players there and I'm going to want two or three of them at a minimum. And that's for Fox. And again, I'm not trading Fox unless I have to. I mean, he's 27 years old. He'll be 28 next December 20th. So, I mean, we're talking about a guy who, if you can get him in the right headspace and you can get this team in the going the right direction, he could be your point guard for the next 8 years still. And so I think you can visualize a world in which, you know, the Kings have a starting lineup of something like Malik Monk and Jalen Green with Jabari Smith Jr. and Keegan Murray and Domantas Sabonis and maybe a Cam Whitmore off the bench. That's not a bad team. Mm-hmm. You know, that team's got a lot of talent. But it also is just a different construction. And one of those guys is going to have to end up being as good, equal to, or greater than what you have in Fox. And, you know, it would have to be that Houston is just looking to fast forward what they're doing a little bit and go away from all the young players and, you know, sort of weed through and keep a handful of them and then build around a player like Fox.
Dame, let me ask you real quick to that point. If Fox comes to Monty in a month, it's like, I don't think I'm re-signing this extension. I kind of want to trade. Do you trade him before the deadline or do you wait to the summer? I wait to the summer almost no matter what. I'd be like, all right, Fox, okay, we'll handle this in the summer. I'm not trading him now, mainly because my thing is I have to talk to Houston. And Houston don't want to do nothing right now. So I'm going to wait for them to be open for business, and then I'll talk. It's good that you let me know. Thank you, but I'm not in the business of trading you right now. What do you think?
Yeah, that's where I'm at. Like, if you're going to do anything, you need to wait till the summer. And, you know, that means that you only have a year left of Fox on a guarantee. But any of those deals is going to come with the stipulation that he's going to sign a long-term deal wherever he's going. And so,
which means he's going to have influence.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, he's going to have some influence. No, for sure. And like, look, he's been a good soldier for you. It's not like you want to send him to the worst place possible.
You send them to the place that makes your team the best. Mm-hmm. Look, no, you don't want to be here. You don't want to be here. That's fine. Okay. If that's Detroit, it's Detroit. If it's Orlando, or Orlando's good. If it's if it's somewhere else, like if it's a place you don't like yo, you deal with that with them. Because mm-hmm. there could be a team out there that takes the Paul George, Kawhi Leonard risk and goes, nah, okay, we'll win them. My problem.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you're right, Damian. You do look for the best offer available, but those offers change when he says, I'm not going to go there.
You're right.
And that's
or I'm not going to sign there. You know? Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I'm not going to sign there. You know.
To answer your question, I'd probably wait. But also, and I don't want to keep harping on this fictitious trade scenario, I'll ask now. I have no problem with that. I'll ask now. And two, James, you said this. I guess I'm just a heel all of a sudden, because what's the right headspace for him? I feel like we've been asking him to be in the right headspace for 3-4. And I'm sorry. I'm sure Mrs. Fox is never going to listen to this show again. But what are we talking about at this point? What are we asking his headspace to be? De'Aaron Fox is De'Aaron Fox. We've seen him his entire adult life. That's him. He's not going to change whether the team is losing. He's not going to change whether the team is winning. He's De'Aaron. Mm-hmm. What is the right headspace for him?
So, to be honest with you, I think he wants to be on a winner. And a winner that, you know, if his team is winning, he's going to get all the accolades. And, he kept saying that early in his career, like, hey, winning will take care of everything. And then the one season they won, he made the All-Star team as All-NBA and proven correct. You know, like winning does cure all in the NBA, or at least for the most part it does. And that's kind of, I think, what he's looking for. He's looking for a situation where his legacy can be wrapped up into something bigger. And if Sacramento can provide that, I don't think he wants to leave. I think he just feels like, you know, we're heading towards a path where you almost have to leave, because if not, you're just going to do what Damian Lillard did and waste the best part of your career with a franchise that can't figure out how to get it done. And that's always going to be the problem. Can you figure out how to get it done? Because look, I could see a pathway this summer where, again, we can do all kinds of hypotheticals here if that's what we're doing, but where, you know, the Kings hit a reset button, but they hit a reset button that's super intriguing to Fox. And I don't mean as in trading players. I mean, as in, you know, whether it's a new general manager, a new head coach,
new owner,
whatever it might be, you know, got to hear what you said.
I said a new owner.
Yeah. Well, no, but I mean, like, there could be some situation where it's like Fox looks at it and goes, oh, man, that looks really good to me. Like, I would consider staying and seeing if we can figure this out with this group of people moving forward. And I think that's what we have to be open to, that what makes De'Aaron Fox happy today and what makes De'Aaron Fox happy this summer or later in the season might be different things, you know. And I don't think you should be picking and choosing like your pathway forward just with De'Aaron Fox in mind. You should be picking and choosing your pathway forward because your team's not good enough and you need to figure out ways to improve the roster. And, you know, like whatever it is, it's happened here. It's proven out that through, you know, 30 something games of the season, you're not competing. And so you need to change things. And I agree with Fox that the roster isn't good enough. And you didn't know it wasn't going to be good enough until you got into the season and it proved to be not good enough. But now you're at a point where it's like, okay, what do you do to make it better? And, you know, like the Cam Johnson thing, man, that's a tough blow. I think the Kings have been talking to the Nets a lot, and all of a sudden Cam Johnson rolls his ankle and walks out of on crutches last night. And, you know, that could change what you're looking at, but it could also change the price of Cam Johnson a little bit. It could change, you know, whether he's available or not to the Kings. And, you know, maybe you got to sit for 3 weeks or 4 weeks without him if that's what his ankle, you know, injury is. We don't know yet. But, like, these things are always fluctuating and moving, and it is like really tough to be a general manager in the NBA and have moving targets all over the place, because yesterday's price for Cam Johnson might not be today's price. And, you know, that's just a reality. And it's why you're always hesitant about putting someone out there on the court who might be someone that you're looking to trade, because there's always that possibility that, you know, he just went from getting two first round picks for a guy to, hey, he's going to be out 6 weeks. You're looking at one first round pick now and some, a lesser prospect, that type of deal. And so, yeah, things are always moving and always changing.
James, let me ask you a question about Monty McNair, his approach to improving this roster. Don't want to stall him out, because some of it is his own doing. A lot of it is his own doing. When you talk about not having the assets, not having the second round picks, and, you know, the way they've kind of wasted those in recent memory. But do you think it's plausible, possible, probable that he almost couldn't make a move until Devin Carter got back and cleared to play? Because you think about it like this, people say trade Lyles and Herter. All right, well, if I trade Lyles and Herter for one player, if depth is my issue, I'm just went -1 with people that I could play, no matter how good Cam Johnson is. I just lost a depth piece, and depth is my issue. So now having Devin Carter back, I can maybe trade it, or having him here in general, I can maybe do a 2-for-1 trade and still at the very least be at the same place I was as far as bodies, capable bodies coming off the bench. And now maybe balanced out a little bit more. I got a guard, I got a forward, or whatever the case may be. But do you think it's as simple as he just said, I can't almost physically do anything until I get another player to be in that rotation?
Yeah, like, I get what you're saying. But I would say this, like, they still have Jordan McLaughlin on the bench that they could play. They still have Doug McDermott. They still have Jay Crowder that they could play more if they had a pinch and they needed somebody to fill in the rotation. And, like, you can say, well, that would be a downgrade. And it's like, would it really be a downgrade? Because I'm not sure that, you know, what you're getting out of some of the players that you're playing right now, that there is a huge downgrade that you can do. And I'd also say this, you know, like, you bring up Devin Carter. What if, like, you needed Devin Carter to be healthy so you could trade Devin Carter, and so you didn't have to include one player in one deal, so then you could use that other player for another deal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so, like, I know it sounds complex, but, like, it's possible that there is a Kevin Herter, Devin Carter trade that works out with the Nets. And instead of giving up a bunch of first-round picks, you give up a guy who is a former first round pick who hasn't played yet or will make his NBA debut tonight. And then what if you turn around and you take Trey Lyles' contract and you move that for Jonas Valanciunas or something like that? And so you're sort of making moves upon moves. So I'm with you as far as like the depth piece, but what if the depth that you need is it has to be acquired in different ways? And I'm not saying that that's what's going to happen here. I'm just saying that that there is a lot of ways in which, you know, Monty is going to try to piece this thing together, and it might not be one move. And you might make a move that clears out a bunch of your depth and then have to turn around and find depth in a different way. And that's why you should probably do a lot of this stuff before the season starts, because, you know, it kind of feels to me a little bit like what happened with Phoenix last year, where they made all their moves right at the beginning, you know, like leading up to the season. And then once they made all those moves, they have no way to make another move to get better. And you saw very quickly, they didn't have the depth, and their depth ended up being like their Achilles heel. And so, you know, sometimes it is about the ability to go out and sign a guy or to bring a guy in that, you know, that fits your system. But also sometimes it's finding multiple deals that make your team better, but in just ways that we're not seeing right now that haven't materialized yet.
Hammer broadcasting from the bomb shelter over at the Golden One Center where they shoot NBA TV at. Hammer, we're doing a lot of hypothetical talk, a lot of what the future could be. The fact is, Doug Christie has taken over as the head coach. He's won two of the last three games. He's won two in a row, and they've got a Memphis Grizzlies team coming in tonight to the Golden One Center. It's going to be playing without Ja Morant, and I called the victory against the Philadelphia 76ers the biggest, and I think it's certainly the most important win that the Kings have had so far at the Golden One Center. The crowd was really engaged, and shout out to De'Aaron for that shot at halftime. That really sent the crowd into a frenzy, and then him and Malik in the fourth quarter really kind of kept things going there. So, you know, the story tonight, at least as it stands right now, Hammer, is the debut of Devin Carter, who we've been talking about a lot. And we've kind of gone back and forth on what we've seen in the G League and what that should actually mean. But there's a lot of eyes on him tonight, and it feels, Hammer, like there might be a little bit of pressure on him.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, people have to understand he hasn't played – he's never played in the NBA, but even like the G League, he hadn't played in 9 months. Like, this is going to be, I think it'll be a really cool moment, especially with his dad here. His dad, Anthony Carter, is of course an assistant on the Memphis Grizzlies team. So you have that aspect. So that's cool. The fact that he's made it back in early January, I think that's a really good sign as well. We don't know what he's going to look like. We don't know if what we're seeing at the G League level is going to translate to the NBA level, like right away. I think what we will see is a guy who can really rebound, who hustles, who is like sort of all over the place defensively. And he's just a ball hawk. Everywhere you look, you know, he's there. He's right near the ball all the time. And so for me, I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued to see. I hope that he continues to hit threes like he has in his first two G League games. But I'm also like realistic to understand that not only is this a young player who hasn't played in 9 months, but he also is a player that missed all of training camp, who missed all of everything and his summer workouts and learning all of the stuff that comes with that. And so when he walks onto an NBA court, he's not going to get the opportunity that he has in Stockton to go out and shoot 12, 15, 17 times a game. He's going to have to figure out what his role is. He's going to have to figure out, just like anybody else does, how to play within the parameters of the NBA rules and to learn on the fly very quickly for a team that is way behind the eight ball and doesn't have time for him to like catch up. And so like they're already behind the eight ball. And if they're behind the eight ball, I don't even know what Devin Carter is. He's behind the eight ball and the, like the cue ball and the three ball and the seven ball and like every other ball. Like, I'm not quite sure how else to describe it, but like he's got a long way to go, and he's joining a team that doesn't really have the time to wait for him right now because of the situation that they put themselves in. You got a head coach who clearly will be asked to play him. But like in a perfect situation, you know, Doug Christie would want eight practices with this kid to make sure he knew exactly what he's getting. Mm-hmm. And that's just not the luxury you're going to have during the season. And so I'm intrigued, but I'd also just caution people, like, Doug Christie's trying to win games here. And if Devin Carter steps on the court and he's not going to help them win games, or if Devin Carter steps on the court in the last 3 minutes of a game and doesn't play the rest of the game, but just steps on the court in the last 3 minutes of a game, that's okay. Like, this is the situation that everybody's in, and there's really no way around it other than to be patient and hope that the kid gets it right away, and hope that he isn't a player that steps on and, like, looks lost. And that's totally a possibility, because, let's be honest, he's never played with any of these guys ever. So, like, there is no, you know, 5-on-5 that he's played with Domantas Sabonis in the last 2 months hiding out that makes him understand how to play with Domas. He's done some walkthrough stuff, but that's a lot different than live game action and trying to learn how to play within the structure of the NBA with players that have very distinct skill sets.
Yeah, you know, I look at Devin Carter's game, you know, in college it was a little different because he was that guy, and, you know, he had the ball in his hands a lot. But, and he probably did even in Stockton a little bit too when I think about it. But I look at the way he plays, and if you're Doug Christie and you say, hey, you're about to get this 4-minute stretch right here, be confident. The only thing I'm really looking for you to do is just play hard. You know what I mean? If you got a shot, take it. I think that's conducive to who Devin Carter is just at the core, right? Like, just go out there, play hard. You may make some mistakes. That's cool. But if you're out there tired or walking around or unsure, then that's when you're going to come out. I want you to give everything you can. And I think because that's what's going to be asked of him, and that's kind of who he is by nature, I think we're going to see some decent minutes from Devin Carter whenever he does play.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. Like, if I'm Doug Christie, I'm probably looking at, like, hey, when can I run a 2-3 zone? And can I stick him in the game for a few minutes while I'm running a 2-3 zone? When can I put him on in sort of an isolation defensive set where he's only going to be defending one player? We're not going to switch everything up for the next 10 minutes or the next 3 minutes type deal. Like, there's always that possibility that you can simplify the game for him, put him in sets that he's known from his college days or known from playing high school, where he can fit in and just really kind of settle down and not have to worry about the complexities of the NBA. Like, should I go over or under on the screen? Should I switch on this screen, or should I drop back? Like, there's all of these things that Devin just hasn't done at the NBA level. And, you know, the last thing I want to see is him trying to defend, you know, Desmond Bain on one play and then getting switched on to, you know, a much bigger player, a much smaller player. Like, all of these things that happen during an NBA game, that just makes life a lot more complicated. And that's where, like, just having experience at any level would help him in this situation. So I know the G League has at least, like, put him in on a pathway to get in better shape. Now it's about, like, how do you learn the nuances of the game on the fly when you're, you know, 35 games or 33 games into an NBA season and you haven't played in 9 months.
Do you have any sort of update on Keegan? I checked the latest injury report, and it hasn't been updated in ever.
No, but I'm going to guess that he is not playing tonight. He definitely has been listed as doubtful on every media, on every injury report that we've seen so far. Let me see if there is a current one. No, he's still doubtful for tonight. But that also, you know, it hasn't been updated because Devin Carter and Isaiah Crawford and Isaac Jones and Mason Jones and Orlando Robinson are still considered out because of G League assignment. So we will see an update. But, like, look, this kid has been dealing with a really, really bad ankle for a while. And from what I know, it's not a sprain. He jammed it is how I've heard it been described. And it just keeps, like, you know, like, collecting fluid, and he's had to have a shot or two to try to get him through. And the thing that you can't do is, like, in the NBA season, this kid's playing 38 minutes a night and 37 minutes a night. The only way to really get this thing healed up is just to give him a couple of days, you know, have it have it elevated, let it drain, make sure that it heals naturally. And, you know, the Kings medical staff have done their best to keep him patched together the best they can. But I think where we do see this is, you know, he doesn't have his legs. He doesn't have his legs under him fully. He's not as quick on the defensive side of the ball, but also he's just coming up short on so many 3-point shots. And you can tell that he's not 100% right. And I think the only way that this team has any chance is, number one, to get a second Keegan Murray. But number two, to get the one Keegan Murray they do have 100% healthy, so he can help you the way that he should be able to. And as of right now, he's just not healthy enough to do it. So I'm hoping that that they give him, you know, today, maybe maybe the back-to-back Sunday, Monday, and then you see the Kings start having little breaks in the schedule where you might be able to get him some recovery time.
Oh, man, I completely forgot about the Sunday game. I thought it was Memphis-Miami. I completely forgot about that Sunday
game. Yeah, they got to go down to the dental office. Man. I was talking to Bonte, or Butch wasn't there, but I was talking to Bonte this morning.
Okay.
Yeah, man. Huh? They ready. They're trying to figure out Buddy Hield. That's
good luck, pal.
Huh.
Good luck, guys.
Sometimes you can just ask.
Yeah.
You know, what is the line from Tommy Boy? You know, I can find out about a bull by sticking my head up his bleep, but, or I could just ask a butcher. Like,
you could say ass, James. I don't know if ass isn't allowed on the insiders,
that's
but
true.
It's perfectly
that's
okay
true.
On D'Lo and KC.
Damian mentioned earlier in the show about how the integration, the possible integration of Devin Carter combined with Keegan Murray not being around may be, I don't want to say a blessing in disguise, but it may
it
help with
help.
Rotations,
yeah.
You know, simplify things because there's not an odd man out. And if everybody's there, it feels like there's an odd man out.
Mm-hmm. Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're all selecting Herder, but because there's still room for minutes-wise and position-wise for somebody to play, you can get Devin Carter in there and still get Kevin Herder in there and try to figure out whatever you can with Keegan Murray's minutes in his position. But do you kind of see the same thing where it may help him out rotation-wise when you talk about what Doug Christie's trying to do?
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. Keon Ellis went from, like, playing 11, 12 minutes a night to 38 minutes. Like, that's not I know Keon's young, and I know he's in great shape and all that stuff, but that's not, like, a recipe for success, typically, to take a player that's not playing very much and then play him. You know, jumping up to 25 or 28 minutes, that's one thing, but having to play 38 minutes, that's a whole other thing. And so I definitely look at this as, I don't want to say it's a, it's like a full on blessing that Keegan Murray's not there, but what it will do is it should open up a little bank of minutes where Doug might be able to allocate some of those over to a player like Devin. I hope it doesn't come at the expense of Keon. Again, it can come at the expense of Keon for like 8 of those minutes and put him at 30. The lights kicked on in here. I don't know if you guys
I thought the
that,
sun but... just started shining like in your bomb shelter. I was like, what?
Yeah. No, I just got NBA TV. And I put my foot on the box on the ground and it kicked on the lights and all of a sudden I look good.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Well,
you look great.
I look pasty, but
yeah,
there it is.
That's all right.
Yeah, so I definitely I think it's possible that this will help the at least Doug to open up like 5 to 8, 10 minutes for a guy like Devin. And look, maybe Devin steps on the court just like, hey, look, here I am, I'm ready to play. And everyone's like, I can't believe this is happening. This kid's just like 100%, like he never missed a beat. And you know, maybe it changes the way the Kings look at their season moving forward. Maybe it changes what they're offering in trades to other teams. But either way, you know, I would rather walk into a game with Keegan Murray than without it.
James Hamm, live from the Bomb Shelter at the Golden 1 Center. We'll come back. We'll talk more. It's the Kings and the Grizzlies tonight. Kings looking for, believe it or not, their third straight win.
Say word.
In the Doug Christie era. So we'll come back. We'll talk more about this with our insider from the insiders, James Hamm with D'Lo and KC here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320. All right, back here with James Hamm inside the NBA TV studio rooms out there, at which is really just a cinder brick room.
Yeah.
That actually looks like some sort of solitary confinement.
I mean, they could put some of those, the foam thing.
The padding, that would help, yeah. It looks like where they send unruly fans, and they were just like,
unruly fans.
Put a camera in here and put a backdrop.
What
and
is it'll this, be, veteran stadium?
That's where they... Put,
were they at the jail at the
where they put puke guy is they
put yeah. Where did puke guy go?
Oh no, no, they have a jail cell in the building.
Dude, yeah.
I haven't seen it here, but I did. Oh well, I mean, I could always tell that story, but
well,
my friend Blake Ellington at the old Arco recorded a video of a high ranking member of the someone in the ownership group, the previous ownership group, and one of their entourage get into a fist fight. And Blake was taken into a dark room and told to give up his phone. And he wouldn't give up his phone because he might have a video of something.
They almost broke his hand.
He did not have good video of what had happened. But just to say, like, they definitely had a cell. At Old Arco, well, and I guarantee you they have a cell here.
The cell at Old Arco was throwing them in the clown tunnel.
Yeah, or just walling you in and making you feel like, you know, the clown tunnel is there for your soul. Yeah,
that's
I wasn't really sure where that story was going when you said a member of the ownership group and someone. Well, I just thought the story was going to end with some sort of sex video.
Oh, jeez.
With you.
Goodness.
No,
I thought the story was going to end with some sort of sex video. Instead, it was a fight. That's fine. That's fine.
Yeah, I hope we never see the jail cell. It's definitely there.
Right.
I remember during that.
I feel like there's still parts of the Golden 1 Center I haven't seen.
There's a whole other side I feel like I've never seen. I like left there one time on one of the sides. I was like, I don't think I've ever been over here before. But
they took us up to the catwalk when they were almost done building it. They took us up to the catwalk and let us go like out, and it was crazy.
Yeah,
like,
I would have said, I'll see you when you come back.
Yeah, no.
Oh no, I didn't walk out. I just looked out the door through at the catwalk. I'm like, no, I'm good.
That's crazy. That jail cell was probably used during that Kings Warriors play-in game last year around the third quarter. That's all about four different occasions of people getting walked down the stairs. They had too much to drink.
That's where they should have thrown Draymond Green.
That's where I thought you were going.
Adam Silver, send him to the jail cell.
We don't assault other NBA players. Yeah.
Oh, that'd be amazing. Adam Silver, take his ass to jail.
Take him to King's Jail.
Take him to Golden 1 Jail. Oh, it's the Kings and the Grizzlies tonight. The Kings are going to be in a different kind of jail if they let the Memphis Grizzlies dictate this game. Mm. We're joking about fights and old ownership groups. This is a team that will fight you.
Yes.
It doesn't matter, literally and figuratively. Mm-hmm. This is a team that will fight you whether Ja Morant is there or not. This is a team that has a style of play. And if they pull you into that style of play, it's gonna be a tough night for you. Hammer, it seems like the Kings got to find a way to kind of, that word, dictate the pace of this game and not let Memphis slow this thing down too much.
Okay, so first of all, Memphis has the highest pace in the NBA. They're 105.5 per game. They're number one in the league in pace. They're also number six in offense and number four in defensive rating, and their net rating is a plus 8.6. They average 123.2 points per game, which is first in the NBA. This team is really good despite all the injuries. Mm. And I think if I'm Doug Christie and I'm talking to my players going into this game, like, you need to figure out the intensity that they play with in the first like 2 minutes of the game. And then I need you to match it. And then I need you to not only match it, but remember what this is. Make this your new preset for every game, because this team plays hard. They play super fast. They're aggressive. They lead the league in 3-point percentage and 2-point percentage, which is crazy. Like, this is a very, very good physical team that out of nowhere is, what, 23-9 on the season? Yeah. Like, they're just because they're missing players, that doesn't mean anything. This team is going to bring it. And it's something that, for whatever reason, Taylor Jenkins has been able to get this team to play extremely hard every single season he's been the coach. And last season they had, I don't know, 30-something rostered players because of injuries. You know, they're playing with 8 and 9 dudes half the games in the season. And this year, here they are again playing without like 6 or 7 players. It's just brutal what's happened to them injury-wise. But that doesn't change who this team is as a group. They fight you. And if you don't show up, they'll just punk you. And even if you do show up, they make you play the entire 48 minutes. And it's something that the Kings should be looking at as a way that they play the game moving forward after this game. Because if you can bottle this, you can figure out how to play with the passion and physicality and energy that the Grizzlies do. And then you mix that with the Kings talent, then you're going to win a lot of games here in the second half of the season.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way, James. This new, I want to say new, but Doug Christie-led Kings team, this seems like a little bit of a barometer test to see where you're at, to see if some of the ways that Doug Christie approaches the games, the game as a player and even as a coach, rubs off on this team. If they start to take the identity of Doug Christie, because Memphis is a Doug Christie type team, like tough as nails. And you want to get physical? I'm going to get physical right back. And we're going to do this dance. And we saw a little bit of that the last two games, with the way they defended and just really mentally being strong from this Kings team. Now you're going to have that mental, emotional aspect matched up with the physical toughness that you're going to have on a consistent basis against Memphis. I would look at this as a good barometer test about to what this team could be moving forward when you talk about the Kings, if they can start to match physicality with teams like Memphis moving forward.
Yeah, I definitely think that this is a good test for the Kings. But I think it's also a good reinforcement piece for Doug Christie, because this is what he's asking the teams to do. He's asking the Kings to play like this, to play this hard, to play this physical, to get up and down the court, to move. And like, if you want an example of how you can have the number one pace in the league, but the number 6 defense in the league, the number 4 defense in the league, it's possible. You just have to play hard. And so I think this is a moment where anything that Doug is preaching is going to be sort of, again, backed up by the play of another team. Like, look at how they handle their business. And again, like on paper, Memphis tonight, their roster tonight is nowhere near as talented as the Kings. Like, there is no Jaw. There is no Santi Aldama. You know, Zach Edey, I think, is questionable or out. Like, they're down a ton of Gigi Jackson's out. Marcus Smart is out. Like, you have a bunch of guys out on this team or questionable. Like, this is a moment where, like, you have to look at just the style alone and strip it down. And it doesn't matter who's on the court. The only thing that matters is how hard they play, the energy, the passion, the physicality that they play with. And if you can match that, talent should win out. And so I'm with you. I think this is almost like a perfect team for the Kings to figure out and to gear up to play. And then to come out of a game and go, okay, I get it. I get that's what we have to play with if we're going to get back in this thing.
Grizzlies 9-5 without Ja this year. Offensive numbers down just a little bit in the month of December, but overall they can score anywhere from 134 points and beat the Portland Trailblazers by 50, or they can beat Denver by scoring 105 in games that Ja's not there. Of course, this is Ja.
Yeah.
This isn't all of Gigi, this isn't Zach Edey, this isn't all of the other players that James just mentioned right there. But this is a team that has, as you mentioned, scoring 123 points per game. which is in stark contrast to ways that they've played in the past. Of course, last year is kind of the anomaly with Ja Morant out. They've always been exciting. They've always been to get up, been able to get up the floor. But what they're known for is being nasty. Mm-hmm. What they're known for is being, you know, just like a down and dirty team that will out-tough you. Mm-hmm. Every step of the way, they will out-tough you. And that combined with everything that they're able to do on the offensive end, you talk about out of nowhere, it feels like one player's reemergence into the lineup, because as you mentioned, Marcus Smart has missed a ton of time this year. You throw Ja back in with this group, and all of a sudden, a team that won, you know, a handful of games last year is 23-11, 34 into this.
Yeah, and I mean, the last time you played this team, Ja wasn't good at all, and they still beat you.
Yeah.
I mean, Ja was horrible and then got thrown out of the game. Like, he wasn't good. And so that just tells you.
Horrible four-minute stretch for Sacramento at the end of that game. Just awful.
Yeah, exactly. What basically, the exact thing that happened that they did their last time out is what Memphis did to them last time they played. But, again, I'll point out, last time it was guys like Santi Aldama that tore you up. He's out tonight. It was Marcus Smart who had a big game. He's out tonight. Jake LaRavia had a big game against the Kings. He's questionable tonight. Zach Edey's questionable. Brandon Clark is questionable. G.G. Jackson is out. You know, this team is totally beat up still. I would expect, like, if Brandon Clark can go, I expect him to. His family lives here in Sacramento. Well, up in my neck of the woods. So there's usually a large contingency here cheering on Brandon Clark. But this is just a gritty team that's different than most teams in the league. And I think it really does speak volumes. If you're the Kings and you just learn what you can do in the final 3 minutes and 39 seconds of a game and shut a team down and don't let them score again and go on a 15-0 run, you just remember that this is the same exact team that did that to you. And you now know what it feels like to put that type of performance on another team. But also remember back that this group can do that to you just as well.
Jaylen, show Brandon Clark some love too, because he was out virtually all of last year too. It wasn't just Ja. Yeah.
Shout out to Jaylen Wells. You talk about having contingency here at the game tonight. I mean, his first game back in Sacramento in his hometown. There's going to be a lot of people there to wish him well, man. So that'll be cool to see. Three games into the Doug Christie era, what do you see? I should ask James. Do you see any difference with this team schematically, or you know, just motor wise or whatever? Do you see anything different from these guys?
I think the biggest thing that I've seen is I've mentioned this before, but he really has number one. He's relied on Alex Len in the first half, but then gone away from him in the second half. He switched up that rotation where the first two guys out of the game are Fox and DeMar DeRozan. And then he leaves when Keegan's healthy, he leaves Keegan and Monk and DeMontis on the floor together. And then when he goes back to the to Fox and DeMar DeRozan, it's those two with three shooters around them. So I think those are two things that I would point to. So outside of that, it's very similar. I think they're just playing really hard. Like whatever it was, whatever the malaise was, they've woken up. They are sort of, you know, realizing that, you know, once your coach is fired, there really isn't anywhere to go. If you want this season to just unwind, 50 games is a lot to just coast home. Mm-hmm. And either you get busy playing or you get busy quitting. And I think at this point they're listening. I think they all understand. One of the key messages that the players are getting, and especially with Doug taking over as like the head coach, is his love of Sacramento, his passion for the franchise and for the city and for this fan base, and how, you know, he has unfinished business here and wants to instill that in his guys, that this is a place where you're the only game in town. And, you know, taking them up to the roof and showing them the beam the other night, I think it's a really cool gesture, but the words that he spoke during that moment, I think are even more powerful, that you're the light of this city. Mm-hmm. And I think players lose sight of that, they lose sight of, you know, why they're playing or who they're playing for. And I certainly think that that's happened here in the first half of the season where, you know, since I can use the word on the radio, the Kings have been ass at home.
Very good, James.
And, like, you know, to me, like, let's be honest, it's not fair to your home crowd to do what they've done. Mm-hmm. This is an embarrassment. It should be, at least for everyone in that locker room, that you go into a nearly packed house almost every single night, a fully engaged fan base, one of the great fan bases in the NBA. You can't go anywhere in this town and pay for a drink if you're a Sacramento King, or pay for dinner or anything else. Like, this city embraces you, and to reciprocate that love by, you know, like going out and just playing poorly every single time you're at home, that's not who this team is, and it can't be who this franchise is. People are paying a lot of money for these tickets with the promise that this team was going to be better. And they really have been left, you know, sort of shortchanged here by this team. And I think Doug is reminding them that you know, it's disrespectful. And to be honest, these are Doug's people. Mm-hmm. Sacramento is Doug's people. Mm-hmm. And you're doing this to Doug's people. And he's standing up as much as anything for, you know, for that 2002 Western Conference team, but also for the city that has embraced him and his family and been such a huge part of his life.
Trailblazers 8-8 at home. They have 11 wins. The Toronto Raptors are 7-11 at home.
Come on.
They have 8 wins. Oh, man. The Kings are 8-12 at the Golden One Center.
Come on, we got to fix that, guys. We got to fix
that. Five straight losses will do that to you.
It will. It will.
Well, yeah, but they weren't good before that. So,
well, no, they weren't.
You know, they were a 500 team at home or a below 500 team at home. I'll remind people, too, there was a time where the Kings, I believe it's 42 straight road games, they lost. They mm-hmm. lost 42 straight road games in the 90s. And the team still put up 20-something wins every year.
I don't even think, like, Jesse was alive when that happened.
No, I don't think so either. But that tells you that they were still over 500 at home.
Right.
And this team isn't 500 at home. So it doesn't make sense to win 48 games and have 25 of those come on the road. This has been a problem for a couple of years, and I don't get it. I don't know what the problem is, or why this team is bad at home. But it's something that they need to rectify. And I think that that's one way in which Doug is going to imprint on them every single day that we will not be bad at home. And it's one thing for Alvin to yell and scream every single day, how could we be this bad at home? It's another thing for Doug to walk in the room and say, this is my house. If you're going to disrespect this fan base, you're disrespecting me. Mm. And, you know, I'm not going to deal with that. This team needs to figure out how to be good.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited to see what they can do tonight and moving forward. There's a little energy right now with this team after those two wins. And it's not, I don't think it's just the wins per se. I think the way they won those games kind of energized those guys too. You know, showing a little mental toughness to come back against a Mavericks team that was, yes, shorthanded, but they found a way to win that one. And then the 15-0 run to finish that game against Philadelphia. I am a little believer in sometimes the way you win can galvanize you a little bit more than just the win itself. Like, if they would have beat Philadelphia by 8, where it was a coast-to-coast win, maybe it doesn't give you the same feeling, the same vibes as having to show some toughness and come back and win that game. So, biggest thing, like you guys mentioned, is winning at home. You have an opportunity to win 3 straight at home after losing 5 straight. So that's staring them in the face tonight. And I'm anxious to see how they come out, how they're ready to play. I would like, talking about how they come out to these games, I would like for them not to be down double digits at some point in this
well,
game. Can we hope for that?
Probably not. You can hope for it. You can hope for a lot of things.
Yeah, I think so. And look, I just want to make sure, like, for whatever happened here with Mike Brown, like, Mike Brown didn't leave a shack. He left a house that needed a little bit of touch-up paint. Hmm. Like, the fact that this team has underperformed, that's on them. Hmm. You know, it's like you look around the locker room, it's on you to change your outlook and to change where you're going this season. This is a high-quality team. It is a team with a ton of talent. Now, they have missing pieces. We've talked about that ad nauseum. But at the same time, even if they have missing pieces, that doesn't excuse the fact that they are very, very talented and they have underperformed grotesquely. And so, like, look, this is, Doug's job is to try to figure out the way to unlock this team and to figure out how to reach them in a different way and then unleash them on the NBA. And you're hoping that that happens, that it sticks. But, the first couple of games are a good indicator that good things are starting to happen. But you still have close to 50 games left. Like, this is going to, it's more than just some tinkering that has to happen here in order to get this thing back on track. And there can't be steps backwards, especially against teams that are missing half their roster.
Yeah, that's one of the interesting things I was asking myself earlier is like, okay, did the Kings win a couple of games in a row, or are maybe we starting to see the turnaround here a little bit? And I don't think, because they dug themselves such a hole, because they fired their head coach, no matter what happens tonight, we don't have the answer to that. Mm-hmm. Two games isn't going to do it, but it's like, okay, three games doesn't do it. It's like, oh, okay, that's good. It's not even, they lose to the Warriors, win against the Heat, or beat the Warriors, lose. It's not that. It's what do the next 10 games look like?
Right.
Are they 8-2 in that stretch, 7-3 in that stretch? Then it's like, yeah, there's a turnaround here with DC. There's a turnaround since Mike Brown's fight. We're seeing something now, but we don't live 7 days from now, 7 games from now. We live right now. And so I guess, all you can hope for is, go out there and get a dub, do the old Russell Wilson one game at a time and see what happens.
1-0 every day.
1-0 every day. And this is, oh God, are we stacking days again? Are we bringing back the stacking days era?
Stacking days.
Days is back. Here. Yeah, Rico Hines he's part of that Philadelphia 76ers staff.
That's my boy Rico. Yeah. Know your big picture.
Yeah.
So like it's we're living in the now trying to figure out the Kings' future when in reality they could lose tonight and then they could win 3 of the next 4 and you still have to feel good about where they're at. It's just we've got to be patient in this process because it's going to be a long process because of that 5-game, 6-game losing streak.
Yeah. I mean, it's just absolutely killer. You take those losing streaks out of any season, and the Kings have always had them, but you take the 1 or 2 losing streak where that they let it go from 2 or 3 games to 4, 5, 6, 7, mm-hmm. 8, when it didn't have to get there. And like, you can go back and look at, like, they lost 2 games by nothing, by mistakes by their star players in the final seconds. Mm-hmm. The DeMar DeRozan fumble, mm-hmm. the De'Aaron Fox foul, like, it didn't have to be a 6-game losing streak. And let's just take those 2 games. You put those 2 games and you move them over to the other ledger, and this team is .500. Yeah. That's it. And that's what the NBA is about. It's a grind, but it's also about these little mistakes that you make at the wrong time that cost you in the grand scheme of an entire season. And now they've been put in a situation where they have to win a ton of games. They have to win and push for as many wins as possible if they're going to have any chance of turning this thing around.
Well, at least it wasn't a 9-game losing streak.
Well, at least it wasn't 2 of them.
I've been through those. I've been through an 8-game followed by a 1-game win streak followed by a 7-game losing streak.
Come on, man. Jeez.
What year was that?
I don't talk about that.
Goodness gracious.
That's my first year, and I don't even want to tell you what happened the one night in between. The one win they beat the Washington Wizards, John Wall versus DeMarcus Cousins for the first time. And John Wall hurt his wrist during pregame.
I remember that. That was crazy.
Yeah, and I have a great story what happened after that game, and I'm not going to tell it on the radio.
You probably are not allowed to tell it. No. James has great stories.
He does.
Hi, Drake. Nothing. I don't know that anything will beat.
Oh, well, Jacques Vaughn.
I'm not going to take that from Jacques Vaughn.
Come on now. Jacques Vaughn.
Real quick, before we get out of here, the streets are asking, Casey, did you give out that Beam money? I got it. Okay. We got Domantas Sabonis, 41.5 points, rebounds, and assists. Scottie Pippen Jr., more than 4.5 assists.
Real Housewives of Miami.
Combination of Desmond Bane and De'Aaron Fox, 47-point combo. Keon Ellis, half a free throw made. Give me more. And Trey Miles. Yeah, half a free throw made for Keon Ellis.
Okay.
And 10 points for Trey Lyles. Give me more. That's that beam money. Go get that. Must be present in certain states. Prize Picks, run your game.
Hmm. Okay. All right, Keon. See, I would be furious if I had a couple hundred dollars riding on Keon getting to the free throw line one
because he's gonna make
time.
It. He's gonna make at least one.
One time. Oh, that's nauseating. That's I took the holidays off from Prize Picks. I might have to get in here a little bit. Might have to get in here. And
Pacers play tonight.
Man, I'm leaving that alone.
He's cooking now. Huh?
I'm leaving that alone. It's all funny until he scores 30. It's like, all right, I'm leaving that alone. Shout out to my boy Russell Westbrook, who made history the other day. It was so funny when they threw out that stat about not missing and no turnovers. I was like, didn't Domas just do that? Mm-hmm. And in fact, he did. Yeah. It's the three players are Jokic, Domas, and Russ.
That's fire. That's fine.
Keon Ellis has made a free throw and only three of his last 13.
Oh.
Games.
Oh.
Well,
all right.
To be honest, we're to be fair, he's got a new coach there that'll play him.
Well, that's a good point. Have a great weekend, everyone. We will see you here Monday at 10 a.m. with the Insiders on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
Vamos Kings, light the beam.